Good morning. I'm State Representative Kelly Madore from 37A Apple Valley in Burnsville, and I'd like to call to order here the Disabilities Working Group to introduce ourselves to you, to let you know what we'd like to do. And we are a small group today because, as you know, we've had an awful lot going on in the last 2 weeks here, and everybody's schedule is very thin. But we wanted to start off the committee on this very special day, which is the day that the ADA Bus to Freedom Tour is running through Minneapolis. Thank you. You know, this afternoon we'll be going down there. It's an open tour. It's open to the public, so I highly encourage any of you who can take a lunch break and find a way to get downtown Minneapolis quickly. That's going to be the struggle. To go down and take a look at this. It's a very exciting day for us, and to be honest, having this committee established and operating, it's a very exciting day for the citizens of Minnesota with disabilities. This is the first time that we've ever had a focused discussion about what the needs are for 14% of our population. I think this is very exciting for us to say it's time for us to acknowledge that we're here, and we're here to stay, and we're going to integrate into the future of the state of Minnesota, and how do we best do that. So we do have some members here. What I'd like for them to do is to introduce themselves to you, what primary committee they work on. They're here representing the members that we have here. Each are working in a different committee. We have healthcare, education, public safety, housing, and the healthcare committee, and they will be acting as advocates on their committees for some of the issues that we discuss here. So this is very, very exciting for us. It's new, so I want you all to bear with me. I'm new, and I'm going to need everybody's help to be successful in this, and the goal is success. So we're going to be working together, and we will have our agenda set. Again, if you're not aware, I'm also involved on the Transportation Committee, and we are doing an investigative hearing on the bridge collapse, which has ended up taking a little bit time away from my ability to get this up and running. But we will be looking at hosting our first meeting in September. Jen here is our committee assistant, and she will take care of getting agendas out. Each agenda item, each month when we meet, will be focused on one topic. And then what I'd like for you, for the advocates group, to come in and speak to the issue of that topic. So, for example, if our first meeting we choose it to be housing, I would like for you to think about, what do people in Minnesota with disabilities need for housing? Do we need universal design, which is something I've heard quite a bit about, in our bidding contracts? Do we need to have accessible housing tied to transit? Do we need to have accessible housing tied to employment and economic development projects? What are some of those things that we need to have to support people with disabilities for their housing needs? Transportation will be another, employment, public safety, and I'm trying to, and education. And so if we can speak to those topics, if we have bills drawn that you'd like to discuss as part of that topical meeting, please feel free to do that. But because we're in the interim, I'm not imagining that a lot of bills are drawn and numbered that we can discuss. So without further ado, I think what I'll do is Jen, I'd like for you even to do a formal introduction, if you don't mind, so the members know who you are. And we'll start with Carla, and then we'll just move on down the road.
Well, thank you. I'm Representative Carla Bigham, and first I'd like to say is I'm glad to be part of this, and I just can't imagine a better person being the chair than Representative Madore. So she definitely has a lot of experience in advocacy in this area. My district is 57A, which is South St. Paul, Cottage Grove, St. Paul Park, and Newport in Great Cloud Island Township. I come from the Public Safety Committee. This is my first term. And previous to being representative, I was a city council member. And my interest in disability issues came from when I noticed that a lot of new development coming up in our city didn't have handicap accessible doors. And I kept getting angry when I would be at Caribou, and this nice gentleman who was in a wheelchair was sitting there because nobody could see that he was out there, nor could he get in. So it just made me mad. So I brought it to the attention of the city planners, and they've worked with developers to bring these kind of issues to the attention. But that's kind of how my interest was piqued. But I am very interested in being on this committee and what it's going to entail, because I do believe that this is a historical day for us to start the committee, but also just that we continue our work to make it better, whether it's our parks in our state parks, and as Representative Madore said, transportation, housing, and public safety, and obviously making sure. One thing that I think we could look at as far as the public safety issue is those with disabilities interacting with public safety officials and having them be properly trained to deal with some of those issues. So those would be stuff that I would like to see done on the day that we discuss public safety. So, thank you, Senator. And then Jen?
I'm Jen McNerney. I'm the Committee Administrator for the Health and Human Services Policy Committee and staffing this working group.
And then Representative John Wood, who's just been a delight for me to meet this past year. As with Representative Bigham, I've got a great group of people here that are committed to this. So, Representative Wood.
Thank you, Representative Madore. And I agree with Representative Bigham that we couldn't have a better chair for this committee than Representative Madore. She said that she's new. I'm old and new. Folks with disabilities have long-term been a interest and very important issue in my life. As most of you can see, I am physically handicapped, so to speak. I never considered myself that, but I too am, as Carla, as Representative Bigham and Representative Madore, most of us have some kind of special, I think, interest in why we this issue and these topics are so near and dear to us. And it's the right thing to do. It's just the right thing to do. It's, we're all humans. We all have rights and needs and wants and desires. And it doesn't matter whom you are or your physical or mental limitations. We all need to be able to have the opportunities that everyone has. So that's always been foremost in my mind, and so that's why I'm so pleased to be part of this committee. I am John Ward. I'm the representative from District 12A. So I come a little bit further than the rest of the folks so far on this committee. I'm in the Brainerd, Baxter, Crosby, Ironton, Nisswa, down to Fort Ripley area. That is my district that I represent. But I always, just like the rest of my colleagues say, we represent all of Minnesota and all of citizens of Minnesota to do what's best for all of the people of Minnesota. So I'm excited. My background is I'm a former educator and coach. I was a teacher for 33 years, coached for 25 of those years in both regular athletics and adapted athletics. If you're familiar with the Minnesota State High School League, also as a state high school sponsored activity for physically and mentally challenged folks that are called adapted athletics. I was a head adapted floor hockey coach up in Brainerd, the only team north of the metro area in the state of Minnesota. So, again, it's just near and dear to my heart from all kinds of perspectives, but for certainly an education perspective. I was a special ed teacher most of my career, working with LD, learning disabled children and emotional behavior disordered children. So I'm excited about this opportunity, and I appreciate being placed on this committee to work for all of the citizens of Minnesota, but particularly the folks that so much need us to be advocates for them and with them. So thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, Representative Wood. The other members of our committee are Representative Carol McFarland. She'll be working, focusing on higher ed issues and employment, and Representative Bruce Anderson, who will be working on housing. Representative Kim Norton will be our healthcare liaison, going back to that committee again, just working as being an assistive, an advocate for some of the positions that we're going to be, some of the bills we'll be discussing. So with that, I'm going to do something very rare, and I'm going to open it up to the audience. And I'd like to have any members of the audience today that would like to quiz or to ask what this is all about. Maybe today there will be something new that you want to offer, and that might just work out perfect with this committee. We have a little bit of time, so is there anybody in the audience that would like to come up and speak and address any of these, or would you like to have us have a focus? And if you could just come, yeah, if you wouldn't mind just coming forward and just introducing yourself for those that I know you, but the rest of the committee might not, so.
Chair Medora and members of the committee, my name is Roberta Oldtime. I'm the State Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities, which also includes chemical dependency and children with emotional and behavioral disorders. And we operate in a number of arenas, schools, treatment facilities, county social services. One issue that has continually come across my radar screen for certainly the population I serve, but I also believe for other disabilities, it's not unique to our group, is that we have a number of laws related to abuse, neglect, appropriate best practices, professional standards, and issues that relate to, if not done appropriately, would lead to abuse and neglect. My concern is that I would hope this committee could at least discuss or weave into their discussion is the fact that the government, whether it be local, school district, state, county, when they do not follow those laws or rules, it's so what? They have immunity. If it's serious enough to rise to the level of prosecution, there's rarely a city attorney who would take failure to report abuse and charge it as a misdemeanor. So even when we have a sanction with prosecutorial discretion and a number of other entities, and so I really think that whatever is done on behalf of people with disabilities, for it to truly have meaning and be effective for them, the people who are charged to implement it and paid to implement it must also be accountable to the rules. So often people are kicked out of facilities because they can't follow the rules, even if that's because it's a symptom of their disability. But when staff, when programs, when county workers, when state workers don't follow the law, it's pretty much so what?
Representative Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I just ask your name again, please? I didn't get it right to start. I'm sorry.
I should have said I'd be available for questions, but my name is Roberta, R-O-B-E-R-T-A, Oldtime, O-P-H-E-I-M, and if you want, I'll give you my phone number. 651-296-0941. And I welcome calls because I'm hoping what the collective mindset can do will be better than what any of us individually could do.
Thank you. Anybody else? Oh. Another favorite around the Capitol.
Thank you. Good morning. What an opportunity. My name is Ann Henry, and I'm with the Minnesota Disability Law Center. We are our state's protection and advocacy agency. We get federal funds to work on issues for people with developmental disabilities, serious mental illness, discrimination in public programs, vocational rehab issues, and some social security as well. We have little pockets of funding to do a variety of things. I work mainly in the Health and Human Services area, and I'm assuming that that's going to be one area of topic, so I definitely am not going to go into detail. But I do want to raise a couple of issues today, and one in particular that I think doesn't get a lot of attention that affects our system for people who have disabilities so significant that they need medical assistance. And that is our medical, the requirements to spend down below the poverty level in order to get medical assistance. Right now in Minnesota, we have two different standards for medical assistance. One is if you have 100% of the poverty level income, which I'm trying to quickly see if I've got the right figures, the poverty level goes up in July in Minnesota. but I think it's $817 a month. If you have that, you can keep it. If you, say, have a disability or you're a person who's a senior, this standard applies to seniors and people with disabilities. You can keep that $817. Now, that's not a lot of money, but, you know, if your Social Security check is up to that amount or if you get SSI or whatever, that's what you can keep. However, if you have a dollar over $817 a month, you have to spend down $200 more to $613 to live on. And so we have this really horrible situation where we're further impoverishing people. And let me just explain who gets stuck with this. Mainly, it's people who have Social Security. So they either have a work history and have become disabled, or they're the dependents of people who have Social Security and have a total permanent disability. They obviously have Medicare because you can get Medicare along with Social Security, but Medicare does not cover community support services and long-term care. So the folks that we do this to are people who are the most chronically ill or have the most need for support due to their disabilities. And you know, instead of providing them with support and recognizing probably the extra cost they have to pay to live, we take away $200 more so they can access medical assistance and perhaps get a personal care assistant. It is senseless. And then what we have are problems with housing. People can't, you know, on that level of money, cannot afford housing. They can't stay in the community. And so we swirl people off into situations that perhaps end up being more expensive and more restrictive than they need because we're taking away their Social Security because of their health care needs. So I just wanted to say that issue deserves discussion, and I see two places right now where the legislature is talking big picture about these issues. One is the Healthcare Access Commission and all the work going on there, and affordability is an issue. Well, these folks, if you do the math, are paying 25% out of pocket or more of their already low income for healthcare. The other area that I see this fits into is the Poverty Commission, because we are imposing a deeper level of poverty on people. We are actually requiring them to pay their Social Security or their pension because of their higher health care needs. So we're crushing them further into poverty. This is something our state can do something about. We did have a bill through the Consortium with Citizens for Disabilities, and you'll probably hear from more people that are part of that coalition. It is an expensive item, relatively, to fix, but it's really almost one of those, shame on Minnesota for not stepping up here and at least letting people keep up to 100% of their Social Security at the poverty level. So I just wanted to raise that issue, which doesn't often get, I think, enough attention. We made progress on it in 1999, and we haven't worked up. I know we may have to do it in steps, but I hope that we can. So thank you for the opportunity, and I really look forward to having more in-depth discussions as we move along.
Thank you, Ms. Henry. As you know, it's been a big issue of mine is the fact that we do require citizens to live in poverty, and then we turn around and we blame them for using services, and that's just not the right way that we should be handling that. So we will definitely be discussing this in the future. And I look forward to your full presentation on that.
Yeah, let me just say, I think there are there are over 15,000 people. There's actually more elderly people than people with disabilities, but there are a lot of folks in Minnesota affected by this.
Representative Bingham?
Thank you, Chair Mador. This is actually one of the more frequent phone calls that, I mean, I've gotten a few of them. So, I mean, this is something that, isn't going to obviously go away, and we can't count on the federal government to help us out with their medical system, Medicare. And so I think this is something that really does deserve a lot of attention, and I know that it is something that Chair Mador had said that she's going to, bring up too. So I think this is something that doesn't just affect one area of the state. This is a statewide problem too. So
thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Larson.
Morning, Madam Chair and committee members. I can't believe that Ann Henry got by with just one topic to talk about.
Me too.
It's amazing. I think it's the first. Since you didn't bring up stadiums once, I can't believe it. I'd like to talk about several topics, actually, just to kind of get your attention on them, and hopefully we'll be able to focus on each of these in the future with the hearings that you outlined earlier. One of those is self-direction, consumer direction. Minnesota had been a leader and is probably still a leader in the number of people taking up the option of consumer direction. And what I mean by that is having control over the resources or dollars that are available through them, through their waiver program. And that program worked very successfully for a number of years. There were some adjustments and changes that needed to be made to improve it. And unfortunately, in trying to improve the program or make those changes, changes were made so that at its peak, 3,000 people were on the consumer-directed program under the developmental disabilities waiver. And right now, there's 1,300 or 1,400 people that are on that waiver. With the new budget formula, it basically doesn't work for adults. So the ARC of Minnesota, and by the way, I'm Steve Larson with the ARC of Minnesota. The way the formula works right now, people aren't able to access the program that would like to. So we'd like to turn that around and make this program much more accessible to individuals with disabilities. To complement that effort, the legislature did pass the self-directed support option this past spring. And the self-directed support option will be available for those individuals that are not on waivers, that are on straight medical assistance. And basically, this will allow them to cash out their personal care attendance services using a fiscal support entity to help manage that money or at least control the dollars. We believe that this will be a tremendous option for people that are on medical assistance to look at. Many people with disabilities are allocated a certain number or assessed a certain number of hours for PCA services, and then they're not able to fill these hours. With the flexibility that the self-directed support option will offer them, hopefully they'll get much better services, they'll have more long-term employees or individuals supporting them, they'll be able to direct those employees, they'll be able to set a higher wage for those employees, so there's many benefits to that. And the state is convening, as was outlined in the statute, an advisory committee to start working on this in September, and we hope that this option is available in 2008 as early as possible. Along with Madam Chair's desire to work on housing, a complement to the shelter, to the self-directed option is a shelter needy option, which would give a housing supplement to people that would be accessing this service. And we weren't able to get that through the legislature this past spring, but we're hoping to bring it up again in 2008. It had a fiscal note of $900,000, so I'm assuming the fiscal note would be half to $450,000 or somewhere along that. And we hope that we'd be able to look at that so that people would have more control over their resources. Another area that we got started with in the 2007 session is the quality assurance system for persons with disabilities, particularly those on the waiver. Minnesota, along with many states, have been criticized by the CMS that they do not have an adequate quality assurance system in place to monitor what's going on in the waivers and to see if those programs are meeting the needs of the individuals that are receiving those services. A comprehensive report was completed in February that outlines steps that Minnesota can take to implement a quality assurance system, and we'd like that report to be looked at seriously and steps taken to implement it in future legislative sessions. So we look forward to discussing that in more depth at future sessions. Another area that the ARC has been advocating on for a number of years is the lowering of parental fees. And last week we had a public policy planning day this past Friday, and again we heard parents testify of the dramatic fees that they have to pay in order to access medical assistance services. When we had a fiscal note put together for our bill this past year, one of the lines in the fiscal note said that 500 more people would access the service if the fees were lowered just slightly from what they currently are. And that really bothered me from the standpoint that if Minnesota is very concerned about having people have access to medical assistance, or to health insurance, including children. 500 families are not getting the services that they need because of the rate of the level of parental fees that they have to pay right now. I think for a few million dollars, those 500 families should be served. And one other issue I wanted to talk about was just education and special education. We did make some progress this year in funding for special education, but all that really did was catch us up from the cuts in 2003, or at least make a dramatic attempt to do that. And so we're concerned not only about special education funding, but we're concerned making sure that children with disabilities are included in their classrooms and are getting the type of education they need. We've had great disappointment in transition services. It seems like we have not made progress in those in the last 10 or 15 years. We feel strongly that all individuals with disabilities should graduate from high school or graduate out of the school system with either a job in hand or employment skills so that they can be employed right away. And we will continue to work on this effort, and we hope we can spend some time talking about that. And then finally, I just want to mention our Ann Henry did pass out the quality assurance reports, which we'll share with you, just the executive summary that she happened to bring along. She must have a big briefcase with her today.
She always has a big briefcase.
Yeah. And then finally, I just want to say that Alex Bartolik with the Minnesota Department of Human Services Disability Services Division has convened a design group to look at a planning process for disability services. The challenge that we've had in the last several years is that many of us represented in this room have come forward with legislation that we think would improve services for persons with disabilities in the state, but we're each doing it alone, or even if we do it with our CCD group, it's not part of an overall plan that the state has. And by putting together an overall plan, by getting many of the initiatives that we've had to advocate independently for in the governor's budget in the future, we think we'll be much more successful in coming up with services that people need and a service system that meets the individual needs of persons with disabilities. So we're looking forward to the implementation of that planning process over the next several months here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Larson. Any questions? No? Thank you very much.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joel Yulin. I'm from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, Minnesota chapter. I am also the co-chair of the Minnesota Consortium for Persons with Disabilities. It is a coalition of about 100 disability organizations. One of the things that kind of makes our coalition unique is that roughly half of our membership is advocacy organizations and half of our organizations are provider organizations that are providing direct services for people with disabilities. And I think I would even go a step further and to say that that is somewhat of a unique thing. When I talk to my counterparts around the country who work at the MS Society, a lot of times you will find that the advocacy organizations and the provider organizations are at war with each other on a constant basis. And I think that one of the real values that we have here in Minnesota is that we do collaborate. Do we agree 100% of the time? Well, perhaps not. But, you know, we certainly have been able to find where our common ground is on a lot of our issues. And I think that that should be really used in, as a resource for this committee is to recognize that, you know, our coalition does kind of come together and can be a real resource for this committee going forward. I was thinking about this, and I think one of the real opportunities that this committee has is the opportunity to focus on the links for people with disabilities. And I think one of the problems that I've had as an advocate for the past 11 years at the legislature is that when you look at a lot of the issues that face people with disabilities, when you bring them to the legislature, they are put in the silos. You've got your transportation silo here. You've got your healthcare silo here. You've got your housing silo here. You got education over here. And I think one of the things that you have done in creating this committee is recognized what a barrier those silos become, because a lot of times committees don't talk to each other and don't identify what is the best way to serve people with disabilities. And that is certainly been one of the challenges that we have. You know, just to give you a few examples, and frankly, you probably know some of these examples already, but, you know, I think one of the things that our coalition has struggled with through the years is the way transportation policy has been set up, where we have the Metro Mobility Service area, and we'll just focus on Metro Mobility for a moment, and say that Metro Mobility, if you're generally within the 494-694 loop, you can count on that you're going to get a certain amount of service, and you can count on that service. But if you live in a suburb that's generally outside of that loop, that's when the service gets a little bit more adventurous. And
say the least.
As to, you know, both the quality of the service, but also the timing of the service. I think one of the frustrations that I've heard from people with disabilities is wanting to go to work, but their employment is outside, you know, the boundary, or maybe they're, and I've actually had a couple of phone calls just in the past year of people who are, you know, just a half a mile or a mile kind of beyond the boundary of what would be served by the Metro Mobility area, and it's just, it's too far for them to go on their own, and yet, so then they can't take that job, or they can't continue working at that job. And so I think that's what's going to be one of the challenges in this is, you know, looking at from the employment perspective, but then the transportation perspective. Also the housing perspective. Where is a lot of the affordable and acceptable housing being built for people with disabilities? It's being built in areas like Eden Prairie and Chaska and out in those areas. But then when you compare that to the overlay of the Metro Mobility Service map, it doesn't link up to that. And so essentially you have a very nice, affordable, accessible home and no place to go. And I think that's one of the challenges that needs to be addressed by this committee as well. I just focused on the metro area. Greater Minnesota, we have a whole another set of problems, as I'm sure Representative Ward knows, is that you're dealing with a number of counties that don't have any type of wheelchair-accessible transit services for people with disabilities. And then another, there's about seven counties that have no service. There's seven counties that have some service, but it's only available in the county seat. It's not available in the rural parts of some of those counties. But then when you get into just the general part of Greater Minnesota, what you find is that, yes, there is transit that is available, but generally it's from 8 in the morning or 7 in the morning until 4 or 5 in the afternoon. It's extremely difficult for a person with a disability to hold a job because literally the hours of service barely last 8 hours, so a person can't keep a full-time job, get to their employment, and get back home again, to say nothing about a person who may want to work in the evening or something like that. The options are very limited, but I think it's just become a problem here at the legislature to determine, well, who has the responsibility? Whose role is it to try to address some of those issues? You know, you take it even a step further and you look at the medical transportation services, and I certainly know we could spend another couple hours talking about that probably as well. But, you know, what are the opportunities? Is there some opportunities to link some of the transit services that are out there? Because when you look at the medical assistance transportation, when are they being used? Typically from 8 until 4 or 5 in the afternoon. Is there any opportunities to be using those types of services for general transit needs in the evening? Has the state created any barriers so that it's precluding these providers from even looking at that as an option? Or is there incentives that should be created to allow more of that to happen? I think that that's one of the areas that the committee could be reviewing as well. I think in the area of healthcare, certainly Ann Henry covered some of my topic points, but I would go in and say that once again, it's looking at the links. What are the links between access to healthcare services and being able to get out of a nursing home, for example? Or what are some of the barriers? Certainly the state and the legislature has taken a number of actions in the recent years that have reduced some of those barriers from getting a person out of a nursing home and into the community. But they certainly aren't all gone. And continuing to look at some of those barriers, I think, is going to be an important thing to look at. The other thing that I would caution the committee, though, is that I think one of the things that I've found through the years is that it's very easy to default to the worst-case scenario. And what I mean by that is, obviously there are a number of people with disabilities who have very high, very intense needs, and certainly those needs need to be addressed. But there's also quite a number of people who never quite qualify for any help, but are just teetering on that line where their financial stability is about ready to collapse. All they need is just one thing, and then they're pushed over that edge. I think that when you look at the medical assistance program, I think that it is somewhat of an archaic program, frankly, in how it serves people with disabilities. The asset standard is $3,000. So you have to spend all of your income down to $3,000 if you're a single adult. That hasn't been increased by the legislature since 1983. $3,000 back then would be worth almost $10,000 in today's dollars. It goes to show what's going on there. And I think how I would relate that is that if the goal of the state, and I believe it is to keep people with disabilities independent and in their own homes, $3,000 doesn't do very much for you if your furnace goes out. And that's kind of the reality that a lot of people will face, is that, they don't have that, they're not in that worst case situation. They don't necessarily need assisted living. They don't need to be in a nursing home. But they need to qualify for medical assistance to get some of those other benefits. But it's impossible for them to live independently when they only have such a small amount of money to keep. Another example that I would put into this is not related to medical assistance, and this is kind of where I put my MS Society hat on for a moment. It is to say that we are dealing with a number of people who they don't qualify for any of the public programs, nor do they want to. They want to be on their own private health insurance. But private health insurance isn't doing them any favors as well. The most recent example that the MS Society has been facing is that we've had people with MS who are needing the MS drugs, one of the MS drugs. There's four drugs that are out there that treat the overall symptoms. They're Avonex, Betaseron, Copaxone, and Rebif. And each one of those drugs costs about $12,000 to $20,000 per year. So it's certainly they're expensive drugs. But for many years, a lot of people were paying $25 or $30 in copays for these prescription drugs, and they could get a three-month supply. But now, recently, a local health plan made a decision where people can only get a one-month supply, and they need to pay a $200 copay. And for a person who's working part-time and is kind of just barely making ends meet, that is a very difficult for them to get that $200. The other part is this isn't an acute situation where they take that drug for a short period of time and suddenly things are going to get better. They're going to be on that drug for the foreseeable future. So I think the reason I bring that example up is this is what leads people down the road towards medical assistance. They run out of money, they run out of options, and then the only option left to them is to go on to medical assistance because essentially the health plans have pushed them off to the side. And I think that that is another issue that should be addressed, once again, kind of looking at the links. So I would summarize that, like I said, there's quite a number of opportunities for this committee to look at, and our coalition is certainly going to be very eager to help you along the way.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hewlin. I have to tell you exactly what you expressed. Our definition of disability has significantly changed from 30, 40 years ago, and what we need to look at is lifelong care, and that's going to be a big focus of where we go in the discussions of this group. So I appreciate you bringing that forward, and we definitely will be calling you back. And I think what's very interesting too is the new disability that we have, such as disorders such as MS, Parkinson's, ALS. We're looking at disabilities that happen after a person has assumed that they're fine. They're running, they're doing their fine, they've had their children, they're in the midst of trying to figure out how to pay for college, and all of a sudden their life has completely changed because of a diagnosis with no known picture of what that's going to look like. Are we looking at a 3 years before it becomes chronic and we need full supportive care, or is it 15 years out? There's no road for them to travel that all traveled and can give them some guidance. So I really appreciate you bringing this forward, and we've worked together, and I'm really looking forward to talking more about those issues. So committee members, do we have any questions?
Yes.
Can I have a voice?
Joel, will you spell your last name for me, please?
Sure, it's Ulland. It's U-L-L-A-N-D. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Excuse me. My name is David Hancock, and I'm the executive director of the Metropolitan Center for Independent Living. And there are 8 centers for independent living located around the state of Minnesota that provide a wide range of services to people with various disabilities. The unique quality of Centers for Independent Living is that there is no minimum standard to receive services. There's no income standard, there's no disability standard, there's no age restriction, etc. Anybody with any disability diagnosis of any age and any socioeconomic background is eligible for services. And we are very proudly and gladly a member of CCD. Joel and the others that have spoke this morning are also members, and I want to commend them for the excellent job they did of reviewing the various issues. And I just want to, one of the topics I wanted to mention this morning very briefly is a little bit of a reiteration of something that Joel just mentioned, but I also wanted to talk, spend just a brief moment on a second topic. First of all, though, let me thank you, Representative, for convening this committee and putting it together. I think the opportunity to have a committee that focuses solely on these issues is a refreshing change, and I'm sure welcomed by not only myself, but many of my friends and colleagues that are in the room this morning. So I tip my hat to you for that. The first issue, though, that I really wanted to discuss was the importance of having some time with in front of your committee to continue our discussion of the continued deinstitutionalization of individuals with disabilities. Joel spoke about that briefly when he mentioned the nursing home relocation issue. And there are several thousand individuals with disabilities who are still living in nursing homes in the state of Minnesota today for no other reason than it's a convenient place to place people. They're not there because there's an overriding medical need for them to be there on a daily basis. And quite frankly, it's a profitable way to do business. It's not because of where they need to be. So I would encourage the committee to have at least part of its focus on that continued deinstitutionalization for people with disabilities that are living in those types of settings and the various issues that they are confronted in that desire to relocate. And Joel talked about housing and transportation and employment, and those are all issues that we have to face as part of that deinstitutionalization process. As a result of that, one of the biggest challenges that we face, because there is a 180-day rule that once the deinstitutionalization or the relocation process begins, there is 180 days allowable for that successful relocation. Because of many of the barriers that Joel talked about, sometimes we run right up against that 180-day rule. The 8 Centers for Independent Living, as well as other organizations in the state of Minnesota, are very actively engaged on a daily basis in the relocation process. Last year, the Metro Center for Independent Living relocated over 20 individuals. That doesn't sound like a huge number, but when we face the barriers that we do and the labor-intensive process of relocating just one individual, I think 20 individuals, 22 individuals is pretty significant. So very proud of that. But the idea of needing to continue that discussion, to continue to focus on the challenges that are faced by the relocation process or in the relocation process are significant. There is a group that was put together by the legislature about a year ago called Options 2. We came together, we did our work, we presented the report to the legislature, and one of the biggest fears that many of us on that study group had was our fear that this report would be submitted to the legislature, it would be accepted, acknowledged, and placed on a shelf. There are recommendations within that report on housing, transportation, the gap issues. I noticed that John Peter was here, that he chaired the subcommittee on the gaps issues. All of those that are issues that play into that and that dovetail into all the other issues that we've talked about this morning. So as part of the discussion of the continued deinstitutionalization, I would also respectfully suggest that we at least use the Options 2 report as part of our discussion tool. The second issue I wanted to suggest to you this morning was that there are, as you I'm sure know, Representative, thousands of individuals that we live next door to every single day that have disabilities that unless they are placed in a highly specific situation or where a very specific demand is placed on them for performance or participation, we would never know they were disabled. There are thousands of people every day that we live next to, that we work next to, that we play next to, that are people with hidden disabilities, and they get forgotten, and they fall through the gap. There are a significant number of individuals that come through the front door of the Centers for Independent Living every day across the state seeking support, assistance, services that you would never know, because it's not a visible disability. It's a hidden disability. And one group of individuals that we are finding that we are getting much more requests for services for are people with periodic mental health disorders and mental health episodes. And so I would encourage us, and in our discussions, not to forget those individuals whose disabilities might be hidden, and that, you know, live their daily lives in a very functional and effective way, except for those highly specific situations where they may need some assistance. So again, thank you for the opportunity. I really look forward to working with the committee, and either individually and through CCD, and that would offer, you know, our resource at the Center for Independent Living in any way that we can be helpful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hancock, how many centers for independent living are there in the state of Minnesota?
There are 8 centers for independent living in the state of Minnesota. There's the Metro Center that serves the 9-county metropolitan area of Minneapolis-St. Paul. There is a center in Hibbing, center in St. Cloud, Rochester, Mankato.
Hibbing, St. Cloud.
I'm used to just listing them off. I beg your pardon, Representative.
St. Cloud, Rochester.
St. Cloud, Rochester, Mankato, Marshall, East Grand Forks, and Fargo-Moorhead. Many of those 8 centers, there are 6 of those 8 centers that also have branch offices. So if you include the branch offices, there are probably 12, 13 locations in the state of Minnesota. And right now, we work very closely with the Department of Employment and Economic Development and with the Department of Health and Human Services, or Department of Human Services, excuse me, I'm speaking federally. We work very closely with both of those departments in designing and delivering the various services that the centers offer. There are, unfortunately, there are still some gap areas. There are some counties in the state of Minnesota, about 17 counties in the state of Minnesota, that we just have either very, very minimal or non-existent services because we just can't get to them. But I'm very happy to say that we are working productively with BEAD and through some of their new leadership, with Kim Peck as the director of rehab services, has brought a whole new light to that process. And we are working very diligently to develop plans to close those gaps. We're also working with the Department of Human Services through the operation of the Disability Linkage Line to bring services to people in those outlying areas in a different way, through the Disability Linkage Line and the call center service. So, thank you. My pleasure, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee and staff, I'm Bruce Nelson with ARM. We're an organization of about 160 providers who provide services to people in ICFMR, the DD or MRRC waiver, CADI waiver, CAC waiver, SILS. In total, our members employ about 27,000 direct support professionals who work 24/7 in supporting people with disabilities. I want to join in the chorus, too, and thanking you, Madam Chair, for convening this committee. It's a wonderful development and opportunity, and we look forward to working with you. I wanted to just focus my remarks on 2 issues. One is adequate resources. Ann Henry and Joel Euland brought up the urgent need and the backlog of how many years it's been since folks have had an increase on income and asset limitations, and that's a severe handicap for people with disabilities. Also, the COLA that was adopted 2% last year, that primarily goes to those in our organization, 27,000 direct support professionals. We've gone through a number of years where folks who do this work are increasingly underpaid as inflation moves faster, even faster than the 2% adopted, and so we need to be addressing that. At the same time, we realize that with pressure from the federal government and the many decisions that the state has to make, not only in Health and Human Services, but in other areas, that on a per-person level, there very likely will be fewer dollars per person to work with, and therefore we do need to think out of the box. And that brings up the second issue. We need to turn around a lot of the regulatory thinking that's been developed, one on top of the other, designed to clearly, the intent is to assure the protection of vulnerable adults and children. And that's an appropriate role, and we can never abandon doing that. But at the same time, there's a myriad now of often redundant regulations. We've created barriers to moving toward what I think we all want to get to, and that is to have self-determination, as Mr. Larson and Steve Larson talked about. We share, all of us in the disability community, in that goal. What do people with disabilities want? What are their needs? Let's focus on what we do so we use our precious resources on addressing that while making sure that we are addressing the health and safety issues of people. So, there's good news in all this. And the good news, I think, is what Joel talked about, through CCD and the relationship in Minnesota, that is unique, maybe not solely unique, but certainly a wonderful thing, where providers and advocates and people with disabilities do join together with a common vision. And as Joel said, sometimes we disagree on how to get there, and that's healthy and that's good. But at the end of the day, we agree and we work together. Also part of that good news, Steve and I think Joel talked about the design team, the collaborative that's coming together under the leadership of Alex Bartolik over at the Department of Human Services. In the next few months, you're going to begin to see not only some, you know, grand thinking, we can always come up with great ideas, but with some specific action steps that we can take collectively as a disability community, sometimes with DHS in the lead, sometimes with Disability Law Center, Dole Group, ARM, but in the end, working toward the same and common objective. So I do look forward to continuing to work with that group. And, in fact, we're going to be meeting at 11:30 right after this, and I'm sure we'll, you know, be all pumped up after this hearing. And working with you, the legislature, Department of Human Services, and all of the stakeholders, including county across Minnesota.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions from the committee? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And after this, I'm only going to have time for one more testifier after this, so somebody's been waiting to jump up. Hello, ma'am.
Hi. I'm going to be brief. My name is Judy Sanders. I am legislative chair for the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota, and maybe it's appropriate that I make my remarks near the end, because I would like to maybe give a little history lesson. I know that most of you, maybe all of you who are here today, are freshmen, and you haven't had a chance to join with us in the many successes that we have had over the years. The National Federation of the Blind has been coming to the legislature a lot longer than I have been coming to the legislature. And we've had many successes, but I want to just mention one that affected not only us as blind citizens, but every person in Minnesota. When people went to the polls in the 2006 election, for the first time in our lives, we were able to vote privately and independently. And I can't tell you how special that was. You know, all of you have been voting all your lives, and I know you appreciate the civic process, or you wouldn't be where you are. But to actually go and cast a ballot for the first time and not tell anyone who I cast it for, even though I went outside and did, was very special. And this came about through the efforts of federal legislation, state legislation, and advocacy work from the National Federation of the Blind and others. To make this possible. It was a bipartisan effort, and it was a pleasure to see. We are not through with this process yet. There are still glitches to work out. We anticipate that on the first day of the next session, you will be solving one of those glitches which got missed last session. Oh, I won't go into why, but anyway, there are still problems to be worked out, particularly with how we will cast our votes if we live in small townships. There is a cooperative effort with the township people and the disability community to solve these problems. We're going to do it, and you're going to finish it on the first day of session.
So it sounds like a challenge, members.
No, we have it all done for you. And that's, I think, an appropriate way to end on a positive note.
Thank you very much. Question? Well, I have to tell you, I always come from a place of dignity and privacy. And I think that people in the disabilities community have been giving away an awful lot of that over the years. And I think it's time that we take that back. As citizens, I think it's important that we have some focus here, that we have people be able to live their lives and not have to have a medical condition dictate the rest of their lives, their financial ability, their ability to get a job, to be able to drive outside of their county. I don't think most people understand the impact of a medical condition on the rest of your life. And disability-related legislation is what brought me here to the Capitol. It's a passion of mine. It's the way I live my life right now. And I would like to see us always come together as a group here to be fully focused on the individual. And somebody had mentioned, are people happy? Are people feeling satisfied, quality assurance? You know, I can't tell you the number of people that I've spoken with over the past year that have said to me, nobody's ever asked me. And how sad is that? That's incredibly sad that nobody ever asked me what I wanted. I was told what I could have. I was told what I could be given. I was told if I had a certain position on something or a certain condition, or if I was lucky enough to have a doctor sign a note, that I could get a service. But nobody ever asked me if that's really the service I wanted. And I think it's time that we start putting the focus on that. I can't solve the funding issues in this committee, and I want to be honest with everybody here about that, but I think we can open the discussion. And I'm willing and welcoming all of you to help me do that. This is a collaborative. Those of us sitting here would like to help you get to where you need to be. And I'm just grateful that you're all here today to let me know that you think this is important, as I am. And I will be sure to let our leadership teams know this, and we will be moving forward. And I expect all of you to be there to help me on days when we have to advocate for something and be asking for this. If we're done begging, it's time for us to ask politely, as I was quoted in the Access Press there. It's time for us to start getting the things that we need to be successful. So, I thank everyone. I thank the members today for coming. We will be, as I said, I'm very sorry I don't have our next meeting date scheduled. We will have that done within the next couple of days, having our calendar done with our topics. If you have reports that you would like to have us to read prior to the meetings, because again, we're always looking at a time crunch here, and we spent an hour talking about what we could talk about. That goes to show you how much we have to be working together. Please be sure to forward that to Jen so we can get them in our packets. I would like to see the members have it at least 24 hours before the meeting so that we can come back and ask you questions on that. We also, I've just been told that our meeting schedule will be posted on the HSA, the Health and Human Services policy page, so you can check there. And then probably by Tuesday or Wednesday next week, we'll have the schedule for the rest of the year. And if there's anything else today that you, I wish I had asked for that, or I wish we could talk, please let me know, and we will look at including it. Right now, we're going to try to stay focused on five areas, but that doesn't mean that we can't have more meetings after our initial five are done. So thank you very much. Committee members, thank you very much for coming today. And let's get this thing off on the right foot, and let's move forward. Thank you. Okay, so with that, I'll see you on now. Let's adjourn the meeting.